and welcome to the Open Era Podcast. My name is Devang Desai, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Simon Bushel. Bush, we're back again. In January 2022, things would be calm and cool as we entered the Australian swing, right? Real tennis to talk about, real tennis only, and yet the biggest news possibly in the last, 30 years when it comes to tennis dropped this week. We had Novak Djokovic declare he was exempt or received a medical exemption to come to Australia. He tweeted out a pic. He was on IG. He's coming. People are elated. People are mad. And then there was this drama at the border, at the Melbourne airport. There's so much to get to, Simon. I think first we need to drop in the Law & Order theme song music as we prepare to discuss this absolute dumbassery that we observed this week. So let's listen to that. Perfect. Okay, Simon, where do we stand now? We're recording this on a Sunday, hours before a lengthy trial is supposed to take place between Djokovic and the Australian officials, where both sides will present their cases, and we should receive some sort of resolution, at least in the short term, about whether or not Novak can stay. But overall, what the hell? What the hell has happened here, Simon?
Well, you can tell how bizarre this week has been and how action-packed it's been that we dropped the chit-chat from the opening 2 minutes and just went straight into it, because there's a lot to get to in here, really. And it starts, as you mentioned, with the aforementioned Novak Djokovic turning up at Melbourne Airport, being detained effectively at the border due to discrepancies in what his paperwork or what was presented to the authorities at the border. It resulted in him ending up in a situation where he's in a hotel along with other detained officials or detained individuals. And he was granted the opportunity to appeal the decision of him having his visa turned down. And that case will go ahead by the time you've listened to this, and we'll know the answer to it. And I think that presents us with an interesting opportunity of how we discuss this, Dev, because in a podcast format, it's kind of interesting to cover live events, because by the time you've recorded something, inevitably something has changed down the line. So I pose to you that it probably would be a good idea for us to just approach this from the standpoint of what have we learned since the last time that we spoke to you, and what lessons can we take out of this? Because as an entity and as a whole, there's a lot of things here. There's a tremendous amount of things that go beyond tennis, I think. And I think it would be a good discussion point for us to go beat by beat of what we have learned throughout the week, not just about the sport, but about the wider context of how the sport is covered. So I'd be very curious and interested if we could go one by one and have a discussion about some things that I've noted down here.
Let's go. I've read the list, and it's formidable, but I think we need to do this step by step. And like you said, by the time you listen to this, there will be some movement on the case, but that doesn't mean it's sorted yet. And we can get to predictions about what we think is going to happen, but I think getting a lay of the land is a wise place to start.
So number one thing that we didn't know a week ago that we knew now, against the backdrop of so much conversation about whether Novak Djokovic was vaccinated or not, and that discussion that happened online, we can say with utter clarity now, Novak Djokovic is not vaccinated. That has become clear throughout the course of the week, and we can put that one to rest. The subject of his visa is basically that he was applying to be exempt from the vaccination protocol in Australia based on the fact that he previously had tested positive to COVID-19 within the last 6 months. Obviously, we knew that Novak Djokovic has tested positive in May 2020. So this would be second time, possibly more. Mm-hmm. Who's to say? We don't know. But number one thing, above everything else, it's worth clarifying here, Novak Djokovic is unvaccinated.
And when that second infection happened, I think is a major sticking point right now, sometime in December, possibly, and a December in which Novak was doing a lot of public events as well, which is alarming, but I guess not really shocking considering some of the Adria Tour stuff. But let's say, for example, he was reinfected in mid-December, giving him this exemption. I think that has now become one of the big sticking points for the Novak support group, in which they say this is why he should be exempt.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And it's very difficult for us to sit here against the backdrop of an upcoming court case to really get into the minute details, because by the time you listen to this, it's going to be outdated. And it certainly looks to me, everything from the information that's been presented, that nothing will change here, that the visa will remain cancelled and he will be asked to leave the country. But, you know, it's pointless sitting here and trying to offer a series of prepositions behind this because it's a nonsense, right? So it's probably best that we kind of just move forward. And the second point that I'd like to make on this that became abundantly clear is Craig Tiley himself and members of Tennis Australia seem like incredibly slippery and shady characters and have not come across very well through the course of this. And I think there's been some reporting and there was been a little bit of, how would we say this? There's a bit of vagueness previous to this about the relationship between Craig Tiley and Novak Djokovic. I think we can say safely now sitting here that that is a very close relationship and the two are in constant dialogue and heavy dialogue, you would say, over the past year in terms of what this process would look like. Tennis Australia and Craig Tiley himself look absolutely appalling and awful. And some repercussions are going to come down the line here, Dev, and I'm not entirely sure what they're going to be, but I came out of this feeling really bad about that organization and him as an individual as well.
I think the one thing I'm pretty sure of is that he's going to fall on the sword at the end of all this. And it's shocking to say, considering how powerful a figure he is in tennis. And like you said, he's got very powerful friends, whether it be Roger Federer or Novak Djokovic or the most premier people in the sport. Craig Tiley has their ear. And I think part of the problem here is that there was rules for some and rules for others. And I think Craig Tiley was working behind the scenes to ensure that. And then you ended up seeing players that already had checked into Australia and were starting to play being removed again because they had to enforce the rules to everybody. It's so messy. And I think a lot of people come out of this looking terribly. And Craig and Tennis Australia are some of those people. And it does throw the character of this tournament into question, which is a shame because it's obviously one of our favorites. But to see it shake out like this, you cannot walk away and have the same amount of respect for that organization that I once did. I can say that safely.
I would agree with you. And I think the wider tennis body as well is arriving at that as an entity as well, which I think it will have repercussions down the line, won't it, in terms of what that organization looks like at the top and who is going to be leading it. I think we can safely sit here and say that we would both be shocked if Craig Tiley is in charge of Tennis Australia at the same time next year. I don't know how he survives this situation. And I don't know how there's not a huge shakeup within Tennis Australia after this. We are talking about a number of aspects to this, not least that close relationship between him and Novak Djokovic and that dialogue. But the sense that Tennis Australia has misled the three individuals who were unvaccinated and seeking an exemption using this, let's say, I don't want to say fraudulent because that makes it sound too aggressive, but in some capacity, some shady loophole to try and get through this system. That against the backdrop as well as some reporting that came out from Ben Rothenberg during the course of the week saying that last year at the Australian Open, Craig Tiley was very unbecoming and somewhat shady in how the information was revealed about what quarantine would look like and how severe that would be to a lot of players, somewhat downplaying how difficult that would be. And you're starting to build this picture of someone who is willing to protect his tournament and his brand and treats the players secondarily to that. And that's not really a good position to be in. And that does not build trust amongst the player body and really as us, as fans of the sport as a whole.
Well, we'll talk about this later, but I think this gets to the conversation of like how star obsessed this sport is or how star obsessed the power players are, much to the chagrin, I think, of the average tennis fan. And this is yet another example of this behemoth that is the big three or is Novak Djokovic or insert anyone else's name here, playing by a different set of rules entirely. And only until this cavalcade of things coming together, including a bunch of Australian politicians trying to make a mark and Scott Morrison trying to desperately save his poll numbers, like only till that happened did we get here. Not to mention the millions of Australians who are mad as hell after going through one of the strongest lockdowns in the world, if not the strongest in Melbourne, especially. It took that to kind of get them to check themselves and to realize that maybe there has to be some actual enforcement of what's going on here.
I think we will get that, Dev, in a second. I think there is a wider discussion as we go beat by beat of what we have learned during the course of the week. And I wanted to touch on next Novak Djokovic's parents himself, who seem incredibly unhinged and detached from the situation, exactly of how the wider public in Australia feel about this situation. And you do, for me anyway, I think we knew there was a certain element to both of his parents being very forward, having some very extreme opinions, and really that very strong Serbian nationalism element to this whole thing, which we sort of knew a little bit. I don't think we quite realized how strong that was in that household or amongst his supporter group. And I think that's something that I really learned this week. I don't know if that was the same to you, but when we did our breakdown a few months ago about who shows up in the Novak Djokovic's mentions episode, like when we did that breakdown, we missed the nationalism element to it. And I think that's on me, because I just didn't think about that that was such a heavy element of a support group of why he has the following that he does. And I think it was alive and well this week when you're talking about him effectively being a martyr figure or a pariah in some capacity. This is not good. This really is not good. And it was quite dangerous.
I joked on the Discord that I was Novak-pilled because I had seen the reports of him being isolated in the airport and then in this this quarantine hotel, basically, where he's with other asylum seekers, basically in a room that's not super great, and he's not getting the same meals he would normally get, and he can't practice, and he's got no access to TV or internet that often. Like, I understand, I think, why people are so upset, whether you be a Serbian who's proud of your country or a big Novak fan. Like, I get that aspect, but I think we kind of moved quickly beyond that to cult figuredom and martyrdom, like you discussed, where it's us against the world and nobody wants to see us rise, nobody wants to see us shine. And I think we have that hotel to look at specifically in Novak's case, where that's not true, because there's a lot of people in there who are suffering the same fate, if not way worse, because they're not an international tennis star. I think I kept seeing you don't treat the world number one like this, you don't treat the world number one like this, especially from fellow Serbian stars or people in the diaspora, being like, if this was anyone else who's number one, they wouldn't be treated like this. And I think, again, that kind of goes back to, like, this is now a class thing to me. It's like, this is not some guy. This is our guy, a future prime minister, probably, of Serbia. So I think there's this level of, they're offended and embarrassed. I think embarrassed is what I picked up as well. And I this whole week, outside of laughing hysterically at the memes and the banter, I did try to take a step back and be like, what is it like to care so deeply about this man and see what he's going through like this? And if you removed everything else, and that's almost impossible, if you remove the facts part and him being coy about this and him never being straight up about it, you could say the treatment he suffered or what he was told by Tiley and co and what he's experienced is not up to par, Bush. Like, that is not okay. I don't think that was right.
I think that's true. I think the first part of that I would agree with, in the sense that the way that the Tennis Australia and Craig Tiley handled this with the communications, I think that that is one thing.
Just lying? Lying was the plan.
No, I think that's fair. I would agree with that statement. I would agree with that language. I think the second part of it, of how he was treated as someone who is detained and cancelled a visa. Like, you can throw any different version of what you want about it, of like, you know, world number one and where's my anti-gluten diet and all this sort of stuff. I'm sorry, but there's consequences to your actions, right?
Border enforcement alone is shitty, is what I think I'm trying to get to. You know what I mean? Like, that is the whole, this happens to others. I'm like, yeah, that's still shit. Like, that's still not good.
Right. Yes. Yes. We are in agreement, very much in agreement.
I know how pro-border you are, Puss. I know how, and we'll get to your Nigel Farage thoughts. But just to put a bow on this, on the parents thing, Nigel Farage is literally in Belgrade right now supporting Novak's parents. I think that is the perfect just thing to encapsulate how bonkers this whole situation is. Nigel Farage, defender of borders, is now saying this.
Yeah. So you answer your thought. I'm lost. Like, what do you want? Like, just tell me what. Anyway, moving on swiftly from the parent situation, it ties nicely into, I think, a lack of understanding within the sport. There was a sense of real elitism, I would say, privilege that exists inside of tennis journalism that a lot of people seem to learn for the first time during the course of the week, that you know, border issues might actually be a thing, that people might be being detained. Wait until a lot of these people hear about the way that either immigrants or refugees are treated at certain borders. It was quite shocking for me to see some people that I genuinely really do respect being shocked, I think, at the treatment and having to learn all of this. And it's a good job that they did learn it. But at the same time, it does show you somewhat of a bubble that the sport lives in, that it's never really had to deal with this stuff before.
Well, I mean, maybe one of the bougiest sports that we can talk about for the upper echelon of players. But Novak is not the only one staying at the Park Hotel in Melbourne. And I think you've seen the protests from not just Serbians, but like other people outside his hotel trying to be like, when this is done, please stick around, camera people and news anchors, because we've got some other stories to tell in here about what's going on. The COVID element is like, it's so hard to remove from that, but it is another layer of the story, right, Bush? Like, it's border enforcement and Australia's decisions they made there, but also the idea that this has not been an easy 2 years for anyone, but I think especially those people there, they have a different viewpoint than someone in Belgrade will have. And I think it's fascinating to see this clash so heavily in the most public of ways, because it feels so emotional. And then obviously, this, like, plus to that is that there is right and wrong here. I think he should have been vaccinated. I think that's just straight up what we're talking about. And I do say, Bush, if he didn't post that Instagram, Twitter post about saying he got the exemption before he flew, he would have been fine. He absolutely would have been fine. He literally set off the alarm. He wanted to be that guy. He wanted to be classic Novak, and he gave them an out, which I think is the biggest misstep he's played.
Not convinced about that one, I have to say. I agree with it from a public relations standpoint. He still would have presented the same paperwork. Anyway, I think that is an interesting conversation that we can have once we know more next week, once the next time we speak to everyone. I just wanted to close off this segment of saying things that we learned during the week that we didn't know previously. And I think there's a real tangible element to this one for the general public as a whole, that occasionally you see these things that people can really get their teeth into. I watched during the course of the week the college admissions scandal documentary, which is running on Netflix. And you see the way that there is clear delineation between these people who are rich get this and we don't. And the same thing was true with the Christmas party in the United Kingdom with Boris Johnson's government. That there was rules for one and rules for another. And this is another clear snapshot example of there is rules for the rich world number one, and there is different rules for us as a public that we're being asked to do these things. And these are things that across the board is much more easy for people to digest. There's a clear and obvious villain and a clear and obvious sort of example of what the right thing to do is. And I think it really goes to show where we are in terms of how much hatred and anger there is towards elites in society and the wealthy. And this is just another moment which kind of indicates that.
Well said. And I find it fascinating that, like, Novak, the story that he's about of coming from not a lot and growing up in a country ravaged by war, it's about coming up from nothing and kind of standing apart from the crowd and removing the personal accolades. He doesn't think of himself as an elite. I watched a video from the ATP finals where he's talking about, like, the elites will do this and the elites will protect them. I'm like, what, man, you are an elite now. Like, you certainly act like it, because you don't play by the same rules as everyone else. But I don't think he necessarily sees it that way. And I think there is this kind of dissonance where he's like, he's stuck in between these worlds and kind of woe is me about some things that are clear to almost anyone else, that this is a terrible idea or you shouldn't do this. And he constantly does it. And I saw people this week also being like, isn't it amazing how he can battle through this mentally? He can battle through, quote unquote, the haters and just become still such a great player. I'm like, I don't know if that's an illness though, man. Because, like, that to me is, that's way out there. That is way different than anything we've ever seen. And it's a struggle.
It really is. There's the great CM Punk promo when he's talking about John Cena in, like, 2011 or 2012. And Cena's always, Punk is basically saying, like, Cena still sees himself as the underdog. Like, you know, And the line that Punk says is like, you're the 16, 17 time world champion. Like, you're the man, dude. Like, what are you? And the same thing I kind of want to say to Djokovic, right? Like, you're 20 time Grand Slam. You're getting audiences with presidents. Yeah, like, you're not that.
Which we'll keep this going when we come back after the break. But don't worry, we'll also hit Real Tennis TM. It's back, baby. Real Tennis 2022. We have a lot to get to, but we'll wrap this Novak convo and talk tennis coming up next on Open Era. Welcome back to the Open Era podcast. Of course, we're talking Novak Djokovic off the hop, and there's a lot to get to. But Simon, just on a couple more points on the things we've learned this week. This tie between holistic or alternative medicine and the alt-right, I think, is a fascinating thing to observe. And I think Nigel Farage being in Belgrade is probably more in line with that. It's not about borders. It's about this anti-vaccine stance, which I don't know if you can live anywhere in the world and be immune to it, because I think we've seen protests all over the place. They're always small, usually, and some of the people are horribly unhinged. But I think this tie is something that we're definitely seeing in this story as well, Bush. And I'm finding very weird. I'm finding it very interesting who is popping up as a Novak Djokovic fan who I've never heard speak of tennis before in their lives. But now suddenly they're all in.
Yeah, I'm thankful for Easy Ace Machine in our Discord server for pointing this one out, because it's one that I had thought about during the week but couldn't quite articulate it in the right way. And it's one that it's very true, especially in the United States and also in Canada, that one of the biggest groups of people that have been sucked into the QAnon space is your holistic medicine groups. It is mostly women. And I think that's a really worrying situation. You've seen it exasperated here in a way that is also really troubling, is that those spaces have become weaponized for harm and for an alt-right pipeline. And that's so troubling and so weird in a lot of ways, to see either a timeline or to see articles being written by people who have no previous tie to the sport of tennis being sucked into this because of the spaces they find themselves in and the narrative that they find themselves in as well. Really, really, really troubling, Dev. And one of those that it makes me feel really sad watching it.
The story was everywhere. Like, the BBC World Service was leading with it. I literally had people who know I love tennis text me being like, what the hell is it? Like, Novak did what? Or Djokovic said what? Like, and people who don't really talk tennis with me. And it's, I think Luke mentioned this as well in the Discord. It's the rare time when tennis breaks through the noise and becomes it. And it's usually something utterly bizarre and dumbfounding. And I think we checked so many of those boxes with this story. And it keeps going, even at this verdict that's come on Monday in Australia. You better believe it'll keep going. And I'll be fascinated to see what the reaction is from the fans at the Australian Open as we get closer to that. A few more things, which I know we're tight on this, but yeah, keep going.
Sorry, I just wanted to finalize a point that you are making. And it's one of those that you've seen a narrative during the week of saying, like, this is so bad for tennis. Like, this is awful for tennis. And like, we're only in the news when we do something bad. And I just kind of want to turn around and say to them, like, tennis has always been a political sport. Like, where the hell have you people been hiding? Look at the history of the damn sport and tell me a moment where it's not been political, either from women's rights in terms of equal pay, in terms of gender, even a trans issue which happened 40 years ago in this sport ahead of time. Even things when it comes to race relations and it comes to, you know, positions of privilege and authority in society. This is just another extension of it. Don't give me this nonsense, the idea that tennis is immune from this stuff. It's been there all the damn time.
It's about the libertarian world, Bush. If you better get in or get out of this new libertarian world order, as Mr. Djokovic so eloquently stated in his Spartacus rant, which I found, again, Novak's dad. I have a lot of empathy for his dad being just bonkers. But boy, oh boy. Okay. I mean, we could talk Novak all day. And I think, once again, the next time we talk to you, this story is probably developed in just ridiculous ways. So we'll leave it there. Actual tennis happened. And it is serendipitous, Bush, that after I piled on the ATP Cup for being quote-unquote a fake competition and quote-unquote not actually real, Canada went on to win the whole damn thing. And I genuinely loved it. I watched a lot of it, being an early bird like I am. But I think I've been skeptical of this competition and the new Davis Cup and why they destroyed the Hopman Cup and where this falls on the calendar and why is Rafa Nadal playing at the same time if Spain is playing. These are all fair questions. But just in isolation, I was very pleased to see Felix do the damn thing like he did. And it kind of leads us to what we're going to do in this segment, where we're going to make some big calls for this season. And I'll start with the Canadians. I think Chapo, maybe less so. I think Chapo is playing the lesser ranked players in these ties, but Felix basically being the guy and showing up against very formidable hardcore players, Medvedev aside, but beating Zverev, beating Cam Norrie, beating RBA. This is a really big year for Felix. And I think we're not talking just one title, not sneaking a 250 in, but he's a top tenner. I expect a lot. And I think he's going to achieve a lot in 2022.
With a huge thanks to Craig Tiley and the folks at Tennis Australia, we always knew that this was a good tournament. We always knew that it was going to be the one, right, Dev?
Love it. I absolutely love it.
It was enjoyable to watch both Felix and Dennis perform at a really high level during the course of the week, and to see actually a level from the pair of them that we think that they can get to consistently. I think that's the really exciting part for me in watching how they both performed this week. Big things. We've got a lot of expectations. And I think this surface actually, and how quick it's playing, the conditions, the heat, all those things are going to play in really well for them to have a good start to the season down under in that summer season. I'm very excited because quick courts with those two, the way they hit the ball and the way they move, I think we can expect some positive things.
Chapo needs 10% more game management, and he's there. He is right there. I think there's this oftentimes in these matches where you question shot selection or thinking or what the hell is going on, but I think what I saw this week is someone maturing in front of our eyes because he's still a young guy and he's still deciding between the backwards hat or the bandana. And these are big choices, but I think that was great to see. And anytime you see Canadians lift a trophy in tennis, in a tennis competition, you still got to pinch yourself a bit. It's still quite mesmerizing, even though I've disparaged the ATP Cup several times. Moving on, we both have him down here, so let's get to it. Rafa Nadal won in Melbourne, like I mentioned, not playing with Spain, but playing in the Melbourne series, of which there are a couple. But Bush, I think Novak, will he or won't he status, is playing into our confidence that Rafael Nadal is going to start off this year really well.
I think Rafael Nadal is going to win this tournament. I think he's going to win the Australian Open if Novak Djokovic isn't
in it. Do you think he's watching this live stream with the court live stream with like a pen and pad and notes, try to phone in tips to the prosecutor?
It would be one of those wonderful chef kiss moment where you have allegedly like Tiley wanting that famous 21st title for his friend to be delivered at the Australian Open this time. And then Nadal comes in from his wheelchair on his Zimmer frame and wins 21 and takes the record in front of them. It would be very entertaining. A perfect chef kiss moment if it does happen.
I believe it. And I think like how he won, I mean, it wasn't always clean. Rusevori was some hiccups at the end, but Max Cressy, who I think Max Cressy is going to be the it guy that Riley Opelka was last year for American tennis. That's a formidable guy to take out. And all these reps that Rafa gets, he's always in that medium ground where not too much. You don't want him to play too much, but you want him to play a bit. And I think he got exactly that. He's in a good spot. He's in a much better spot than his main rival. I'll say that. That isn't Daniil Medvedev or Zverev. So Rafa Nadal starting the year off with a bang. I see it. Ash Barty as well starting the year off with a bang. I think her success last year kind of got lost because she didn't end it well. Bush, like she's still the player of the year, but it didn't really feel like that in some ways. I think her starting off with a victory is a good sign as well. And I would like to see her right some wrongs from past Australian Opens in terms of some disappointing losses. That loss to Sofia Kenin majorly sticking out in my mind. But I think Ash Barty is primed for a very good beginning of the season as well.
Yeah, so Ashbardi beat Kennen, Swiatek, and Rybakina, or Rybakina, to win this title. And she also won the doubles, just as a side note. I think we can still say that she's a paper world number one, right? She hasn't actually beaten anyone at this point, so... <that's>,
Okay.
You know, just like, I need her competition to be a bit better. I need her wins to be a bit stronger before I'm ready to anoint her as the world number one.
My only Bardi critique was the, you got to trust athletes with their bodies take when she was asked about Novak, which I think is now the only take I really, you could go full Benoit Paire for all I care, but I don't need to hear the athletes with their bodies take anymore. Your bodies are in amongst the rest of us, Ash. They're all together. The whole thing about immunity and developing stuff with us all is that we all do it, not just the athletes and the non-athletes. So miss me with that, please.
I am an athlete, so you should die for me to win the Australian Open.
I mean, it's a terrible DM to get. That's basically a DM you're being sent, being like, hey, this is my take on this. So I'm putting that aside with my hopes for Ash in the early part of the season. And Lord knows there's been some ridiculously bad takes, which we'll get to in parting shots. But I think she's going to do well to start the year. I think we were denied the Halep Osaka final in that Melbourne Somerset because Naomi pulled out due to injury. And I hope the abdominals are right. This seems like a tactical or just a smart move, to be honest. But Osaka's backhand looked ridiculous this week, and Simona Halep looked ridiculous as well. I think the Halep-Osaka matchup will be the most consistently fantastic one we see on the WTA this year, Simon. I think we're set for them to play some really big matches in a fantastic way.
I'm really excited to watch Naomi Osaka play Ash Barty at some point in Down Under. I would like to see it happen at the Australian Open because I think those two women are, I would say, head and shoulders above the field. And I think Simona Halep's just behind that, honestly, because mm-hmm. she looked really, really good this week. Her movement looked terrific. Her ball striking was very, very clean. And we all know that she's a terrific defensive player in the way that she's able to retrieve balls. But she looked pretty confident stepping into the court and hitting clean winners as well. She's going to be a force. She's had a difficult time with injuries, but this surface she knows very well. Wouldn't shock me if she makes a very, very deep run, and we're talking about her at the latter stages of the first major of the year as well.
There's some question marks, I mean, for all of them, which I think makes it even more interesting. And of course, we haven't mentioned the 10 or 15 players on the WTA who could win a tournament when they enter it. So, yeah.
May I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
What is the question mark about Ash Barty? I don't understand. Ooh. Other than that, she hasn't done it. Like, why is she not the favorite, the overwhelming favorite to win this title?
When she can't be a counterpuncher, can she win a match?
Right.
I think when she's up against me, and I can't remove the Kennen loss from my mind, but I think when
it's just
she
that,
is,
isn't it?
When she is asked to play on the front foot with a lot of nervous energy behind her, is she going to be okay? I think it's, again, this is a multiple slam winner. So I'm basically throwing glass at a mansion, but I am curious about that, especially at home too, because I bet you, even if you asked her privately, that has to be different. I know Wimbledon's Wimbledon, but there's something different about home cooking. So I'm curious if she gets in that spot again against someone who she's going to have to kind of dictate to, will she be able to hit her shots? That's the only question left. She's answered a shit ton of them.
Mm-hmm. I will say, when she was playing Rybakina, Rybakina could hit the hell out of a tennis ball. It was frightening watching when she has time to set up and dictate points. But the moment that she had to move side to side, she looks like she was outside of the top 50 in the world. And I think that's where Ash Barty excels, is just making her opponent hit shots that they don't want to hit and putting them in awkward positions. And she's a master at it. And she makes a lot of players look much, much worse than they actually are.
I mentioned Max Cressy. Max Cressy quoted this week, "My goal is to make serve and volley huge in the next 10 years," which is the audacity. Fantastic quote. Shouts to Pog for bringing this up. But my prediction is that serve and volley in 2022 will be a bigger thing. Like, I think there will be more strategy in the sense that It'll be a tactic employed more widely by less obvious people, not just your giants. I think it'll come back in vogue and be used by someone to fuel a surprising run deep. Maybe it's Cressy himself. I think you watched Cressy Nadal this morning, Bush. What'd you think?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, if mullets, if perms, and if flared jeans can come back, then serve and volley can come back as well. So
damn right.
That's my stance on it. Just some housekeeping from the rest of those tournaments that we just covered. Rybakina looks like an absolute nightmare to coach. The constant dialogue and conversation, she seemed absolutely ridiculous to watch. Very, very mouthy with the box. That was one that's worth checking out if you can watch the highlights. Simona Halep played and won that title without a visor. It was like eye bleach. You're so used to watching her with the visor that seeing out was very strange. And Rafael Nadal won in Australia for the first time since 2009. First title in Australia. It seems like a very, very long time ago, but it is true. I did check that one.
I'm glad you checked, because there was a moment in this presser afterwards where someone did not check how many times Rafa had made the final in Australia, which was funny. But we'll get to some stats about Rafa a bit later as well. Some mind-boggling ones. Simona with the eye bleach, or eye black, I guess, or that kind of sun protection, I thought was fascinating. What a move. And also, her old coach, Darren Cahill, had linked up with Amanda Anisimova, who won as well. I'm curious to see how that partnership develops, because I think you saw some very promising side. Amanda Anisimova dealt with some personal stuff at the beginning of last year. Her dad passing away, I think that's obviously was a big moment in her life, but she's recovered well, and she's with a coach now that I think can unlock some big things, because we talk about all of the shots, Bush, and someone who can blow you off the court if necessary. I think AA is definitely in that territory.
Yep. Darren Cahill is a pretty good coach as well. Pretty good track record. So clearly there is heights that Anisimova has not reached in her game that I think the expectations were when she broke onto the scene as a 16-year-old, lest we forget that she reached some pretty lofty heights at a very, very early age. I still think there's more to give, and I think we can still see her consistently as a top 20 player. I think she has that ability in her locker. So I'm hoping that this partnership will be fruitful for her.
The courts look great. I think you mentioned them, Bush. If they play that fast, it'll be fun.
Also, the sheer disrespect of this podcast for not even mentioning the fact that Gael Monfils beat Karen Khachanov in the final of his tournament here. That did happen.
I wanted to save it a bit for parting shots, but also like in terms of what I wanted to happen and what I want to happen, I want to say I spoke this into existence, but I think Gael Monfils, for the year he had last year starting off well, was so welcome. And to start the year off with Nadal and Monfils winning a title in 2022, I think was a perfect time machine back to more happier times, Bush, perhaps in 2011 or 2012, when we had more hopes and dreams. It made me a single tear emerged from my eye as I watched Gael and Rafa win, because I'm feeling super washed watching tennis every day as I get older and seeing the new crew of kids come up. But there's still some old heads still going here and getting new sponsor deals and walking new kits and making me feel like I could do that too, because it's never too late.
Speaking of those sponsorship changes, I think we could find an interesting topic to talk about in parting shots. So maybe let's get there. What do you think?
We'll leave it there. The world is waiting on this Karatsa revelation of who he's linked up with. I know Pog is keeping a vigil. We have the Novak vigil in Melbourne, but Pog is keeping the vigil outside the Hydrogen headquarters, Hydrogen HQ, the brand apparel place.
The white smoke coming out the top of the building.
If Aslan emerges with a single skull at the next tournament, you better believe the streets will blow up, because he's a Hydrogen fam. Okay, real tennis, baby, and I think I've mentioned this every year on the show multiple times, but I don't sleep particularly normally or well, I guess, and it's a bit due to work in my hours, but man, oh man, is the Australian Open perfectly timed for those weird sleep patterns I have, Simon. I love it so much. It is great company, and even though half these tournaments are made up and not real, I like how there's so many of them that I can watch at all times.
How dare you disrespect the Somerset? Was it Melbourne Somerset?
Somerset 2? What is that? What is it? Ah, I saw Rafa biting the trophy. I'm like, what is that? Is it a plate? Like a knife? What was that? Ah, okay. I said something nice and then complained immediately after. Open era is back, baby. We are back. Okay, that is Real Tennis TM. When we come back, parting shots, as always. Welcome back to the Open Air Podcast. It's that time again, Simon. Parting shots. I mean, usually this segment, we're kind of going off the wall and we say what we want to say and we have to dig a bit, but there was no digging to be done this week. It all just came so organically that we have so much to get through. So I'll let you kick it off.
Firstly, Matteo Berrettini joined Hugo Boss line of clothing photo shoot that came out this week. Ooh. Good or bad? I can't tell what that noise is. Is that a good noise?
I like Matteo. I like the vibes I get from him. He seems like a good person. I know it's a huge reach and God knows what will be exposed in the coming weeks and days, but I think this is a bit much. This is a bit, it's too ad agency being like, this is a PowerPoint we set up together where we're trying to get these guys together. And I feel like rather than maybe go, and this is not traditional. This is not Nike or Adidas. And I know that's super linear and like he could have gone that way. I think the other more traveled path was to go this way as well with someone like Boss. So I was hoping for a less cringy brand, perhaps, is what I mean.
It's a shame there's no Italian fashion brands out there that he could have gone with.
I don't, you know, right? Link up with Venezia. The football club, the fashion club in Venice, link up with them, get some gold stuff in there. I don't know. I just definitely could see it being formulated in an agency's fourth floor office, corner office with 10 to 12 people in the room.
Just a racket update. Thanks as always to Jonas over at Tennis Nerd. So, I guess important news in some capacity, Andy Murray using a new racket for the first time in his career, which is an interesting development. That's going to be one to watch to see how he performs with it, because I know tennis players are really particular about this these sort of things. And Stefanos Tsitsipas changing string setup as well, which will be fascinating to watch. And it's quite a big change in terms of the string setup that he has. So very, very fascinated. And I guess lastly on that one, Gael Monfils also changing racket, going to Donne from Wilson alongside his big brand deal with Decathlon. He becomes the face of that organization, the very big sporting retailer in France, which has outlets all over Europe and a couple in Canada, I believe. So that one's fun to watch. All black from Gael Monfils, which was a pretty cool look. And that racket fully like blacked out with the black strings. It looked really cool. So those are just three housekeeping notes on racket changes, because they may seem like nothing, but they actually can have a pretty wide effect on the performance level of these top professionals.
And like the only racket change that we read about really in the last 15 years, and we read about it 9 million times, is Roger Federer, right? Like they mentioned it every freaking second. And outside of that, we don't hear about it at all. It's the big three sickness. get the hashtag going, big three sickness. But no, I think it's quite interesting that we don't talk about it as much as we should. I think it was Christian Garin also might have switched to Wilson, or he went to a Blade, which... Mm-hmm. The blade he's using is like, how is he customizing that in his lab kind of thing, Bush? Like the stuff he's pouring into it is not something that you or I can do, or we can, but just for thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it. Whether or not we should do it is another matter. Should we do it?
Is this a good investment? Will I be able to play at all like this top 25 player in the world? Probably not, but I see what you mean. Okay.
Speaking of things that changed and shifted during the last week, Tennis TV rolled out its new logo to a cacophony of boos. Here come the pretzels, to use a Simpsons
audible
quote.
Boos.
Yeah, it was not good. It was resoundingly rejected, I think, by the public. And I have to say on this one, I also agree with them. I don't like it either.
100%. I mean, it's, again, someone tried hard, I think. so I don't want to just shit on them entirely, but there was an approval process, and this was probably the fifth best idea, but the least offensive, based on my experience in these brand meetings. So there was better, but they were too afraid.
Just give the people what they want. It's tennis TV. Just use a tennis ball. Just use a single tennis ball. Everyone understands what it is then. Anyway,
another probably, I bet you it took 8 lawyers to realize that they could not use it because some Japanese TV show in 1978 has the rights to that single tennis ball motif.
Yep. Yes, indeed. So I guess coming a little bit full circle, and we can touch back on the Novak situation, Caitlin Thompson tweeting out earlier this week, seeing the Australian Open news this morning, which I've got my own scorching theories about. I'm sure she does. As we have interviewed Caitlin, sure she does.
She's got
definitely has some scorching theories. Reminds me that tennis continues to misunderstand its massive appeal. It's the game, not the stars. And you touched on this in the opening segment to say that I think tennis does have a bit of a sickness in regards to its obsession with these three big stars. And I think that's probably true on the women's side as well. Two big stars, you would say, in Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams, and the way that it puts those figures on pedestals. She mentioned later on, and I think following that thread along, of how if you go to your average club, how little of them actually watch tennis or really care about what's going on the tour. I actually do agree with that. I've been going to tennis clubs on and off for the last 15 years. The amount of conversation which happens, you know, between matches and at the side of the courts in regards to like, oh, did you watch that 250 event? Did you watch that 500 event? It's almost non-existent. It just doesn't happen. And I think there's an element of truth in that, which is that people care about more playing the rec version of it than actually caring about the top end of the sport.
I think on that point as well, maybe not as clubby, but I read something in Popcorn Tennis, which is a great blog with a lot of different viewpoints and interesting viewpoints. Got friends of the show, Owen and Scott, set up that I highly recommend you check out. Read Isabel Wing's piece there, basically about her lead is perfect. I don't need Novak Djokovic to watch tennis. And she talks about how it's not always about the big three for her, and it's other aspects of the sport. And I think this is also that's something that's been kind of lost and lost maybe in Craig Tiley's eyes as he searches for ways to get the stars into his tournament at all costs, at the cost of his job, possibly. But the numbers and the money men and the algorithms probably say something else, which I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, being like, why are you doing this? But I agree with Caitlin's overall take. And I would just like to also point out the only other takes I really heard from other tennis players about tennis were insane. Like, I could beat Davy Ferrer in a match. And like, oh, Tommy Robredo's a massive pusher and he's got nothing. I'm like, who are you? Who are you, sir, playing at Carleton University on the men's team? What are you talking about? Those are the only takes I heard from tennis clubbers. So I think Caitlin hit it.
Indeed so. Speaking of players weighing in on situations, should we talk about some of the players who had various conversations and takes about Novak Djokovic in the past 2 or 3 days? Because it was interesting to see who decided to get involved in this as a conversation piece.
Well, it is. And like you had the sympathetic ear, which I would say Alexander Zverev, fellow guy who...
Fellow guy who
is linked with Novak in all sorts of ways, but him being like he should have been vaccinated or that would have solved things, I think was strong in terms of what their friendship is and the way they talk about each other. I think that was as forceful as we were going to hear in terms of words, at least for Alexander Zverev. Rafa Nadal, kind of same thing. Rafa Nadal also talking about, well, again, why he thinks it's important to be vaccinated, which he has before, but I appreciate him saying this when he's given a platform again to reiterate this. And then I think you had the more interesting dry responses from Alex de Minaur being like, well, I bet I know what happened there, when being asked about how he was given the exemption, how to prove that, and kind of basically sarcastically responding. And then Jamie Murray admitting or basically saying the truth, being like, I don't think I would have gotten that because I'm not Novak Djokovic. Jamie Murray, who's close enough to stardom, which is not, it's not completely impossible that he might have got it through osmosis of his brother. But I think those responses to me and who they were telling. And then on the flip side, Tannis Sangren. I mean, Tannis Sangren, I said this on the Discord, but like in a weird way, I respect him not even applying for the exemption, even though he's got views I really don't agree with. He just didn't even try to get one by the system almost, which I thought was something else. What I didn't respect was him going on about how this is not a conspiracy, but a takedown of Novak and they're out to get him kind of thing. And then Nick Kyrgios, who I think would be the most shocking to see in the Novak defender list based on all the run-ins in the past. But Nick Kyrgios taking the line, I think, of how he's being treated as unfair. And something that I alluded to in our first segment about the conditions Novak is facing being unfair. That resonated with people as well that I saw. I think people took that and ran with it as well. There's a lot of people in Australia, I think, who were also not cool with how their country is being portrayed. And it goes back to the Simpsons episode with the big boot that we used and like the caricature of Australia and what it means to be Australian. I think that conversation in which Nick was talking about like what it says about Australia was somewhat illuminating, but I think obviously he is in the minority still here.
It's a really interesting one, wasn't it? I think it was maybe one of the most fascinating quotes from the whole week of why Nick Kyrgios came to Novak Djokovic's aid, which I think not an Onion headline, as Luke alluded to in the Discord. Yeah, if you were to tell me 6 months ago that that was the case, I wouldn't have believed you.
Of the thousands this week where I'm like, is this real? This is a real headline that was in a paper today? What?
I saw someone else talking about how the only reason that Nick Kyrgios was supporting Novak Djokovic is because Nick doesn't like the idea that there are consequences to his actions either, which I thought was quite a funny line of thinking about this, which he's just automatically against the idea that if someone does something wrong, they might be punished for it. And he didn't support that as a consequence, which, yeah, no, it's... Yeah, take it or leave it on that one.
Nick Kyrgios is now talking about how he could beat Serena and like random. He's moving full into Twitch personality as well. So I don't necessarily think this is an honorable interjection at all. But this thing is made for strange bedfellows for sure. And everyone has got such ulterior motives that it's impossible to keep track of. It is like a soap opera / Netflix drama. In the end, I think people are pretty selfish, Simon. Like another thing is that I think everyone that I think has chimed in and looked obviously terrible has done it out of selfish motives. And I think that kind of tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, I think there's a danger that you get when you go down that line, you get lost in this idea that it's, you know, human nature and selfishness and all this sort of stuff, which I think objectively is bullshit and always have done. I think it's used as a weapon to try and push for individualistic sort of neoliberal policies. I don't think there's any truth to it. Is that by and large, human beings are very positive, very sharing, very caring, you know, very communal. All these things have been objectively true for human history, for literally as long as people have been on the planet. So it's only situations like this that have sort of come around in the last 50 odd years since you have the rise of structures and systems which push for that sort of belief. I think it's problematic.
I will say though, Simon, I'm trying to imagine getting through some of these things we did in the years past, these big collective pushes. I'm trying to imagine doing it now and just trying to fathom the interference you would face from your anti-vaxxer misinformation alt-right like wing of society that would cause things to just halt in their tracks. And I think this collectivism that we hail about humanity, I think it is fracturing to a disturbing degree. Like I'm not that old, but I definitely do sense that the mechanisms that we have to communicate with each other have never been available before. And that has been amazing. And it's also led to a bit of a breakdown where we're at. Because I think for me, this is pretty cut and dry, but I definitely have come to realize over the past 2 years and a whole couple of lockdowns as well, that it's obviously not for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, right? Like it's objectively a very difficult time to sort of reinvent that or to highlight those things which are objectively there as big bodies of people that collective action is possible. The other part that I would say to that is ultimately, we don't have a choice. Like, we have to. Like, we're faced with extinction if we don't do that. So, like, it has to happen one way or another.
One last point. Scott Morrison, the Australian Prime Minister, like, caricature of a bad politician in the sense that, like, clearly not great at his job, like, widely loathed by a huge segment of his population, like, says a lot of dumb shit, like, just very 2022 international politician trying to win an election, sticking his hand in the jar, seeing what he can find, let it rip, quote unquote, is the election strategy that he seems to be employing. It's an incredible adversary Novak is facing because he's the least impressive one that he's ever faced. Do not like this man at all. So in these points that are being won and these... I don't know. It's just, again, there are no good people really in this outcome for me. There are no good guys.
You know what was good though? There was a lot of quality meme content over the past week.
Too many good ones.
If we're going to find the positives in this whole thing, what was your favorite?
So I chance to Discord, our Discord again, a wonderful community that is growing by the day. We have a new member as well that we will shout out before this episode is out. But I saw a lot of great ones in there. I think the terminal stuff was good till it was overused. And then people were just doing better Photoshops of the same thing, which I think was not necessary. I love from Four Finger Discount, the Mr. Burns bit.
You took mine. I was going to pick that one as well.
Hello, my name is Mr. Djokovic. I believe you have an exemption for me. Okay, Mr. Djokovic, what's the exemption for? I don't know. A lot better if you watched it with the clip, but that was my favorite because I think we were all imagining what exactly went down at that customs area with a border guard who I don't think was probably the greatest either. I think all of the locked up abroad border security jokes as well. I watched that show while I was away from Canada because it seems to be on the National Geographic Channel a lot. I felt those because I definitely could see a future episode with Novak being included. The Ryanair jump in with stealing someone else's tweet and then tweeting out with his in a joke, which I thought was very Ryanair for such an utterly terrible airline. So I thought that was good. But I think the one we posted as well, thanks to Luke Peristi, shitposting God, the myth of medical exemptions and consent, which I think was fantastic. There was too many good ones, Simon. A lot of them in our Discord. Again, not to say, I'm basically, this is my pitch to you. If you're not a part of our Discord, get in here because there's a lot of great stuff.
A lot of quality shitposting. There really is. It makes me laugh every single day. And shitposting aside, it is really nice to be in there, to be surrounded by people that enjoy the show and want to be a part of it.
And especially this week, because like I said, like every person I knew was talking about this and that's not necessarily a good thing. Like I don't necessarily seek out certain people for their tennis opinion because it's usually abhorrent or terrible or like someone coming to insult tennis to me weirdly because they know I like it, but as in like a nice friendly way. You know, you ever get that, Simon? Like someone knows you like something, so they try to start conversation about it by disparaging it, which I think is something I hate, but is weirdly a common track that people take. You don't have to deal with that in our Discord. It's a great place. And I think we're lucky to have that community to go to in moments like this, because like I said, a lot of trash was out there on the Twitter streets and online on Reddit, R Tennis. And I think it was a good space to go and kind of shoot the shit about a pretty seismic thing.
Oh, Lord. R Tennis completely and utterly been infiltrated and owned by the unhinged Novak fans now. It's a place that it's really impossible to be around now.
It really, really became Reddit then. It just Reddit yeah, doubled down on being Reddit is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, thank you to our Discord. Dev, there are two challenges remaining.
I have one more real thing.
Sorry, my bad.
Final shout outs. Rafa Nadal has been in an ATP final for 19 years in a row. Find the clip of him. We retweeted it on our open era Twitter, but find the clip of him reacting to that journalist getting his Aussie Open stats wrong. It's great. It's pure Rafa and it made me laugh. All shouts to Thomas Carbonelli, the Spanish ATP Cup captain. In their runner-up speech after losing to Canada, Lovely line. Quote, as a Spanish player, also in the past, and as a Spanish captain, we can only promise two things. Fight till the end, and we can promise that we all have COVID passports. I thought that was incredibly timely. The crowd loved it. The crowd was going crazy. They're going bananas for it. Great line. So shouts to Banter, everyone.
Shout outs to Banter. And I put it now to you, Devang.
And now, one more time to cut you off. I mentioned that new patron, Peter Ty Christensen. Welcome to the squad. Good sir. Lovely to have you. I saw you follow us on Twitter as well. But like I said, our Discord is a great place. And it's not just there that you get to chat tennis, but you get exclusive episodes that we drop. Plus, you get the shows ad-free. So if you're willing and able, head on over to patreon.com, a couple bucks a month, and you join this tennis discussion and this tennis community that we're growing, that we're really proud of. So join Peter. Be like him. All right, Simon. Two challenges remaining. I cut you off twice. I will report to the authorities, my own personal border guard, to deal with them, as I apologize for cutting you off. But I'm ready now.
Dev, what have you watched outside of tennis this week?
So I think I mentioned this last week, but like I watched a lot of TV the last couple months on the men, and still trying to take it easy and not go too crazy. But I watched Cobra Kai season 4 really quickly. All my Cobra Kai heads out there know what I'm talking about. But again, one of these shows where not great, and I don't think it's supposed to be good or win an Emmy or anything, but captivating, bite-sizable, good stuff. Send me to good actors who are pretty funny. And I think genuinely it's a funny show with the lowest stakes imaginable, which I'm not the first to say this, but it is quality escapism. So I would highly recommend that. And I got into a show very late, which my friends had told me that was great for a while, but I didn't have access to it. But Search Party, which I think is on Crave or HBO Max, is great. And I watched a lot of it the last couple of days and weeks. So, the plot kind of changes from one season to the next, but the story originally is something that I think many of us can empathize with, in terms of like someone kind of being lost in a big city and trying to find their way, and then kind of ending up in this murder, missing, kidnapping mystery that's featuring some really hilarious people. It's really funny. And again, somewhat light viewing, though it touches on some real subjects. So I would recommend those two shows for different reasons. But if you haven't watched any Cobra Kai yet, clear off like a month and you're good to go whenever we emerge from this lockdown that we're in, wherever you are in the world.
Sounds great. I will definitely get to that. I have some nonsensical things for my two challenges remaining. The first being that I recently tried the plant-based sandwich at KFC, plant-based chicken.
I have a million questions, but good on you for trying it, first of all. I don't think many people are champing at the bit to try this, but how was it?
I thought it was pretty good, honestly. I thought it was pretty solid. I enjoyed the mayonnaise with it.
KFC is trying some interesting stuff with their like composting their garbage as well, like the tins they sell you the food in. Not to pump KFC too hard, but I will try it now based on this recommendation.
And secondarily, I watched The Rescue, which was a documentary released by National Geographic last year about the rescue of the Thai football team stuck in the cave. It's very, very good. It's a very good watch. Doesn't rip up any trees in regards to the way it remakes documentaries, but it's just a very interesting story, and obviously one that captivated the world and a world audience at that period of time. Just to see the mechanics at play of how they actually were able to extract those children and the coach was incredible. So do recommend watching that if you're able to find it.
Man, that, when did that happen? What year?
2019, I want to say.
Wow.
Is that right?
Never forget. I will check that out, actually. I'm fascinated by that kind of stuff. Also, do they cover the Elon Musk terrible intervention? Hey, I can help you guys, but I can't help you at all. Do they cover that?
They don't, but it is a wonderful reminder of how much of a charlatan that man is. Perfectly embodied in Don't Look Up in that Netflix series by that central character. It's very, very funny.
Amazing. Okay. Well, I think that's it. We've tried to hit on a lot of things. Like we mentioned, the Novak Gate / diplomatic dumbassery. Who knows where it'll be by the time you listen to this, but we will keep on that when we talk to you next. And actually, we'll have some draws to look at as the first slam of the year is finally here. A reminder, like I mentioned, we are on patreon.com/openera. You join us there, you get on the Discord. Like I mentioned, you get the show ad free. You get it a bit early on Sundays as well. So join us there. We're also on twitter.com/openerapod. Tweeting a lot these days. So watch out and join us for the ride. For producer Greg on the ones and twos, and for Simon, thank you so much for listening to Open Era. We'll talk to you next week.